Thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Yeah, it's the Urban Sports Scene live on Urban Sports Scene Radio. Sorry for the technical difficulties. We should have been started around 3 o'clock, but not 3 o'clock, I said 3 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, right. My bad. 7:30, actually. 7:30. But it's the Urban Sports Scene. Still having a couple of, oh, dang. See, I'm having issues right now. Sorry, people. All right, yeah, anyway. You can't hear. Oh, I see why you can't hear. Don't worry about it. I'll fix you up, Will. First off, tell me what's going on, Will, in your life.
Nothing much, man. Just chilling. Relaxing, just, you know, same old same. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly.
I got some sound.
Yeah, there's a lot going on right now. Yeah, just trying to get things situated.
Basically, mostly just dealing with allergies, man.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, but I'm glad the springtime is here, though.
That's what's up. Where are my outline notes? Behind me?
Behind you.
Thank you. Okay, now we're situated. Now we're ready to rock and roll, okay? There's a lot going on. New software, trying to make sure the Urban Sports Scene is out here live in effect. But for me, personally, what's been going on since we've last had the show? My little boys lost in the playoff game. We had an undefeated season, lost to a good Camp Springs team. I coach basketball, if y'all didn't know that. I coach basketball 11 and under. My team last season's pretty much the same crop of kids. We went 4-6, and this season we went 10-0. So we improved, and we dominated our conference, went to the postseason, and had put up a good fight against a good Camp Springs team, and fell a little short.
I wanted to recommend to you. I'm actually halfway through the book, but 11 Rings by Phil Jackson. Should read it.
Zen
amazing
Master.
Book. Yep, amazing book.
I don't believe in the Zen Master.
I believe in him.
I should believe in him. Is that what you're trying to tell me? I tell me I'm supposed to be a Phil Jackson fan. You know I can't stand Jordan. He's an underling of Jordan.
Well, I'm just saying you should. You should read the book. It's an interesting read.
All right, man. I'm gonna take your word for it. I will read it and then I will carry it, but read it at the same time. Also, listen to our homies, Voice of the Fan, their podcast show at www.blogtalkradio.com/The Voice of the Fan. The show is hosted by Alex and Jeff. Our show is also syndicated on the internet radio station Real People Real Talk Radio. This site is managed by our good friends from Applegee, so make sure you visit the site. It's www.realpeoplerealtalk.com. And also, I'm also involved in a company or, you know, an entity called This Date Is Over. We're having a brunch special for single folks. So the event is called The Love Experience. So check it out. If you want to buy your tickets, make sure you check it out at www.stillsingle.eventbrite.com. It's fun, food, networking, and you may find a date. Who knows? You can find Miss Wright or Mr. Wright or whatever you're looking for. So make sure you check out the site. And also, just make sure you check out thisdateisover.com, a bunch of interesting blogs and their own radio station, which airs Sunday, Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Make sure you check them out.
On the flow.
But still, This Date Is Over. But it's on the flow. Yeah, I got you.
Okay, let's get into our tradition of pregame.
All right. Nats had a big comeback against the Mets. They won the game 9-7. Did you watch the game?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I watched most of it. Fell asleep just because baseball is so freaking slow.
Folks be hating on baseball. Baseball is a lovely game, man.
It is. It's a calming. Sometimes it's slow. And, you know, sometimes they need to find a way to speed up the game sometimes. But I fell asleep probably during the 6th and 7th inning and woke up and watched the rest of the game.
You woke up and watched the rest of the game?
Yeah.
So what did you see in the game? Because I didn't get to watch it. I was at work.
As usual, Strasburg started out
rocky, right?
Very rocky. But he, you know, as, you know, a lot of people predicted, but he calmed himself down during after the 3rd inning.
So what do you mean a lot of people predict? They thought he struggled against the Mets, though?
Well, just people in general. They just be going off of this play last year, a lot of people were saying, well, he'll probably do what he did last year, struggle in the first one or two innings, and then he'll be rock solid from then on out, which he did. One thing that particularly that I observed was the lineup.
And what was that?
Denard Span leading off.
Which is good, though, right? He's supposed to lead off, right?
But listen, then you had Zimmerman at 2. Then you had was it Desmond at 3? Wilson Ramos batting cleanup.
Who hurt himself?
Yeah. Then Bryce Harper So it was just a funky lineup that a lot of people didn't anticipate.
I know Zimmerman at two really threw people off guard, though.
Yeah, Zimmerman at two really it threw me off. I thought he would be batting third or cleanup, mm-hmm. Particularly. And to have, I know Wilson Ramos had a good spring and he was hot towards the end of last year, mm-hmm. but to have him batting cleanup was kind of odd to me. But maybe Matt Williams knows more than everyone else does.
Well, put it this way, the Nats underachieved last year. So this season, now if you look at it, there's an opportunity for this team to do something special. And Matt Williams had to be, he has a different voice. So he has to have a different strategy. Davey Johnson was more of the three-run home run guy. And it worked for him, you know, when they went to the postseason. Last season it didn't. So that's why they brought Matt Williams in for another perspective, another strategy, a different strategy to probably get this team over the top.
Yeah, but anyway, as most people know, the Nats won, pulled it out 1-0, and they're on record pace to go 162.
Okay, real quick. That was it. That's just. Do you think, like, or obviously you mentioned Strasburg giving up four runs, and though he did shut him down after he gave up, you know, those gave up the run. Well, actually after that initial inning, is he really the best pitcher on this staff, or is it? Would you say it's Jordan Zimmerman?
That's an interesting question. I think he has the most potential on the staff, but if you're asking as of right now who's the best pitcher, I'd probably say Zimmerman's the best pitcher just right now, all things considered.
So why is Strasburg, if he's really the best pitcher, why is Strasburg pitching opening day?
Well, former number one overall pick.
And so what you're saying is more politics than actual what?
I think it's some politics, and I actually think that, well, Strasburg is more of a power pitcher, uh-huh. in my opinion, and that's probably they wanted to get him out in front, and plus he may be some of his psyche could be damaged if he didn't get that opening day starter. Whereas Zimmerman really doesn't strike me as the guy who cares.
You don't think Zimmerman's a competitor? He doesn't want that opening day start.
He's a competitor, but you know, Strasburg, there's a lot of politics with that move. If you didn't come out and name him the opening day starter,
so do you think there's pressure on Strasburg to perform, knowing that guy like Jordan Zimmerman, who folks are now looking at as one of the top pitching arms in baseball, period, is on your team and really could be the true ace on this ball club?
Absolutely, I think there's pressure for him to perform this year for the simple reason that last year he was on a pitch count. Mm-hmm. When he came back off of Tommy John surgery. So there were a lot of excuses buffered for him to, let's say, not live up to his full potential coming off Tommy John surgery. And also with the innings pitch count and just the Nats front office and Davey Johnson being kind of wanting to save him for the future.
To baby him,
per se, yeah. But now the leash is off. Now he's got to go out there. He has to show that he has the number one stuff consistently on a night, every fifth day.
And then that's an interesting thing. I mean, I think obviously when I look at Strasburg, I look at his stuff, I'm thinking, yeah, he's lights out. But, you know, he's not dominating like I thought he would, honestly. The Mets, though, it's the first game, and I'm not going to hold him against it, but just what we can go off of last season and even this season, you know, not this season, but even the first game of the season, I just thought he'd be more lights out. I'm thinking, when I look at Strasburg, I'm thinking, like, the best pitcher in baseball, potentially. That's how I look at him. And well, you know, he's not really, to me, hasn't truly lived up to what I thought he was going to be. That was just me. That's the image I have of Strasburg.
Thus far, has he lived up to what everyone expected? No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the future, will he probably? Yes. But it's going to take some time, as all things do take. Mm-hmm. It's going to take some time for him. And we always know that he's one of those guys that once he gets into his groove, he finds that right combination, he's lights out. So, you know, give him one or two starts, and then I think the first two starts of the year be kind of rocky, but after that, once he gets into his groove, we'll start to see the Steven Strasburg that everyone believed and knows that he is.
Okay, there was a survey done with Major League Baseball players about who are some of the folks who are the more overrated individuals in baseball. Bryce Harper was on this list.
Bryce Harper was number one.
He was number one, yeah, which I think is a little bit unfair. I'm not the biggest Bryce Harper fan, but I think it's a little unfair. He's a kid. So obviously, you know, people have him. They had him put to a particular level of being one of the stars of baseball.
Of all time, yes. One of the greatest of all time.
They did. I mean, they did, but he's still young. It's not like, you know, I get the overrated talk when you if you want to compare him to a Mike Trout. I can understand that. But at the end of the day, he's still a young kid. He's still trying to find his way. But my question is in this regard, we just mentioned Strasburg. Is, you know, between the two, who would you say is more overrated? Would you still go the Bryce Harper route?
No, I wouldn't go. I would go Strasburg just because of the injury that, and both of these guys have been haven't had the best of luck when it's come to injuries throughout their career. But if I had to choose one, you put a gun in my head, I go with Strasburg as at this point. But I do think both of these guys will be perennial all stars.
Oh yeah,
and
I agree.
Will bring a knock on wood, hopefully bring a World Series pennant to the Washington D.C. area.
I totally agree with you. I do think both of these individuals will be all-stars for years to come. My whole thing about the two is, again, I'm going to lean towards Strasburg just to the fact that Strasburg was pegged, like, out of college to be probably the best pitcher. Well, one of the top five pitcher just out of college alone. Then we grab, you know, you think year two is just going to flat-out dominate, and he hasn't done what I thought he was going to do. He's been wild a lot of times. He hasn't really manage his pitch count as a pitcher, you know, knowing how to utilize his pitches, knowing how to not over pitch in certain situations or overthrow. I just thought I thought these are things he would pretty much pick up already. And knowing that, you know, seeing him pitch in college, he's like a mature pitcher. So I'm a little surprised at that. Bryce Harper, at the same time, I think Bryce Harper's ready. Obviously, I think, you know, when you get people hyping you up being the next big thing, especially like I call the baseball LeBron James. Is, you know, not everybody can handle it that way. I mean, in the right way. So to me, Bryce Harper, he will definitely be great. I think this season playing under Matt Williams, he'll do well, and hopefully he'll understand that he can't play reckless baseball all the time. Even though he got hit upside his head against that Mets game,
yeah, got leg whipped. Yeah. But I will say the one thing that kind of plays into a lot of people's thoughts that Bryce Harper is overrated is what Mike Trout has been able to come to do his first two seasons in the major. Mike Trout has done things that, you know, it's kind of once in a generation, hitting 320, combined 50 home runs over two seasons, and 100-plus RBI for both seasons.
And if he wasn't going against Miguel Cabrera, he would be an MVP. Like, he'd be an MVP by now.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that also plays into what a lot of people's thought process when they kind of set the bar and, you know, the perception of Bryce Harper being overrated. But as I said, if he stays healthy this year, he's able to play at least 160, 150 games, we'll definitely see another side of him. He'll take his game to the next level.
Yeah, I agree. I have no arguments with that.
All right, let's go up 295 and talk about your Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah, great victory, might I say. We defeated the hated Boston Red Sox 2-1. You okay?
Yeah.
I actually put on the work TV, caught the game, you know, watching the break room. I actually watched the seventh inning throw on. I missed the Nelson Cruz homer, but I saw the end, you know, when Hunter came in and closed the show. I'm excited about this season and what this team can do because I like the pitching staff. I know a lot of people talk ill about the pitching staff, but I like the pitching staff. I think I like the potential of what's going to happen, you know, June, July, and August with this pitching staff, because it probably won't even stay the same. We'll probably have Johan Santana maybe be included in this because there's good reports about how he's been pitching in training. So I'm excited about how the season's going now. You saw what Nelson Cruz did in the game, hitting the game-winning, pretty much the game, yeah, I won't say the game-winning home run to put the Orioles up 2-1, I believe, in the seventh inning. So what this lineup with Nelson Cruz in it, it just gives the pitchers no break in the lineup, you know, and that's what's so exciting about what he brings to the team and what this team has to offer offensively.
I think, and you alluded to it, all throughout this lineup, this team has can hit for power, and they also can hit for to get on base. So this makes this a very dangerous lineup that the Orioles had. That it kind of reminds me of that lineup they had.
When we were in high school, when we were probably in high school.
Yeah,
yeah. We had Eric 90? Davis.
Yeah, when was
Eric,
it?
When they had Eric Davis, Rafael Palmer, Roberto Alomar, Kyle Rickman Jr., B.J. Serhoff, Chris
Alomar.
Roseman. Yeah, Roberto Alomar. I mentioned him. Brady Anderson, Who was your Mike Bordick was on one of the teams. It was stout. It was stacked throughout.
Yeah, it was stacked throughout.
I mean, I could say Bobby Bonilla, but he was there for a couple of years and he left. But that team was stacked, and this team does. I know you mean that this team rivals it. I actually, truth be told, maybe because I was younger and I was just so excited about the other team. I think that team just had a little bit more power. That team was a little bit more scary to me because I feel like they had more professional hitters compared to what the Orioles have. I think the Orioles have power, but the hitters aren't professional hitters. There's not a hitter to me like a Roberto Alomar on this team. Like Roberto Alomar is a 330 a 330 hitter, period. You know, and he's a switch hitter and he can steal bases. He was just too versatile as a baseball player. But I agree with you. I think this team offensively, if we want to compare it, is very comparable because they can score runs and that team can score nothing but runs. That team too was more 3-run homer because Davey Johnson managed that team.
Right.
So it was a three. Davey never wanted to steal bases. It was if I get two people on base. I'm not bunting. If I get two people on base in the loss, I'm not bunting. If I got one man on base, I'm not bunting him over. I'm not sacrificing. We're going to go for the 3-run homer. So that team, offensively speaking, was something special. And this team, too, has the same potential. I mean, I think, to me, in my opinion, this team has some speed, but the players that you would want to run don't run. And it's understandable. Adam Jones is more of a power hitter now, but he does have speed. But he's not going to pretty much steal bases like that. So I'm excited about this team. I'm excited that they – called up John. They had Jonathan Shute make the team, and he started at second base, who's one of the Orioles' big prospects in the minors. He started this game, and it's going to be exciting to see what he does with this season, and if he hit if he can continue to hit. He had a hit against Boston. If he can pick up hits, it's going to make the decision hard for Buck Showalter to send him down to the minors. So very excited what the Orioles can do this season. I said it before. I think this team is in contention to get to the World Series. People talk about the Nats in this area. They talk about the A's and the AL. But I think this Baltimore Orioles team has a good chance to make it to the World Series.
Totally agree with you. It'll be interesting to see how the season plays out. As you know, both teams have 161 more games to go.
I know, both undefeated, so they're on stride.
Yes, for a perfect season.
Yeah, which has never been done before.
Absolutely. We're calling it here first.
Yeah, we're calling it the Urban Sports thing. You're listening and tune in. All right. Let's go down to pregame. Miguel, we haven't been here. Obviously, we haven't had our show in a while, but still, we have to talk about it because it's a lot of money. Miguel Cabrera was paid $292 million, had a $292 million contract, I believe. Was it 10 years? 10-year deal?
Well, it was 8 year that added. He already has two more years left on his year, so 8 year.
8 year years.
It was enough money to make LeBron James jealous. Did you hear about his tweet?
No, what LeBron's
LeBron was kind of envious. He was saying, you know, he wished basketball didn't have a salary cap, you know, so he could make that type of money. But it's well earned. My only concern is Cabrera's 31. He'll be 31 during the season, so you add another 8 years on it, so you'll be paying the guy when he's 39, about 30 million, possibly like 30 million a year. But it's well earned over the past 2 years. He, last year, or was it the year before last, he had the Triple Crown.
Yeah, Triple Crown. He's always MVP candidate. Did he get the MVP last year? I believe I did. Did he get it last year too? I thought he got it last year.
I think so, yeah.
So, I mean, he's well deserved.
It's well deserved, but you know, as we've seen, these big inflated contracts usually don't work out in baseball.
I know everybody wants to talk about how when you compare it to like an Albert Pujols, we're having an Albert Pujols,
or Justin Hamilton.
Is it Justin Hamilton
or Hamilton?
Hamilton. I know you're talking about Hamilton for the Angels. People want to compare it. It's not very in this situation. Pujols had a lot of injuries going into that part of his contract. Same for A-Rod. You want to use A-Rod's, and with him, with the Yankees when he signed that extension with the Yankees. You could tell A-Rod wasn't the same A-Rod that you probably saw in Seattle and Texas. But Cabrera's a different beast because Cabrera, 2 years in a row, has shown he's just the best hitter in baseball, period.
But, you know, there are some people who said, you know, last year towards the end of the season, especially in the playoffs, his back acting up. That could be a sign of what's to come.
Yeah, that's true. That's
for
true.
Him during the
but
long
he's,
run.
It's a blessing that he plays. Again, that's a blessing. And let's put it this way. Last season, he had to play third because he had Prince. First base is strenuous. So in that situation, he can play first base. He can DH. You know, he can be able to DH. He can switch with Victor Martinez. Victor can play first. He can DH. So he can, he can relax. So he can still prolong his career. Now, we look at Pujols. Pujols was an all-world first baseman before before his injury. And so he was always on the field. In the National League, you're going to always be on the field. In the American League, you can still kind of spell him. So Pujols played most of his career in the National League. When he came to the Angels, he already had some wear and tear on his body. Cabrera has already DH'd before anyway with the Tigers before Prince. So he's DH'd a lot before. So it's nothing new.
Yeah, so I was going to say that was one of the points I was going to make. I think that because he plays in the American League, this will be something that he'll be able to earn all of the money and live up to the contract because as we all know, the American League has the DH, the designated hitter position. So
yeah, I've always said that they weren't mean to Barry Bonds. You know, Barry Bonds would still have a bunch of home runs because he would come to American League. He would be in the American League and his stats would be ungodly.
Yeah. But anyway, let's continue to go down the line of the pregame. Mike Trout signed a 6-year, $144 million deal. What do you think?
I thought about this contract, and it was like, is it fair to Mike Trout?
Well, let me put this out there first. Right, he's the first guy I think that's like 21 years old to get $20 million a year. So he'll be the first.
Yeah,
I'll say that. Two. You know, he's only played, you know, some people say he's only played 2 years, but during those 2 years, he's put himself in a category of Mickey Mantle and Ted Williams, things that he's done offensively. Everyone knows he's a 5-tool player. So having said those things, I think this deal is more one-sided for one party, and that's the Anaheim Angels, because this guy, he should get A-Rod money, in my opinion.
I agree. See, I actually agree with you. See, you thought I was going to disagree with you, right? I'm serious. I agree. I think really, the Angels still in the church's money.
Yeah,
I know it sounds bad. The Angels are still in the church's money.
I'm pretty sure, like once, the Angels, once their management got his agent to sign off on the deal and they agreed, they probably hung up the phone and said, "Oh my God, he went for it."
Yeah, they were probably doing a nay-nay or something.
they were just like, can you believe how we got? Well, I'm not going to say got over, but.
No, they got over. They got over. I mean, you're looking at the best baseball player right now, arguably the best baseball player in terms of the defense and offense in baseball, I mean, in the major leagues right now. So in that regard, they're getting over. 2 years of dominant baseball. 2 years of dominant baseball. I thought the second season would probably be a year where he would kind of, you know, live in the moment, be like, all right, I'm sweet stuff, whatever you want to call it. But in the situation, he panned out his second year. His second year was just as good as his first year. So Mike Trout deserves more money.
He does, absolutely. But one thing for him, he does kind of get out. When this contract's over, he'll be 27 years old. And, you know, being 27 years old, he won't even be in his prime as a baseball player. So he'll probably
get even more.
He'll probably shut the bank down after this contract if he continues to be consistent and put up the type of numbers he does going forward.
I expect him to put up big numbers. He should be greedy though. I'm surprised he wasn't overly greedy. If it was me, if it was this ninja over here,
yeah, at least 150 million.
Dude, 150? No, I'm going for 200. I'd be going for 200. Like, I mean, that's why I like Kershaw. Like, he got his money.
Yeah,
he got paid. Like, and he's still young. Yeah. He got paid young. Like, that's always been my argument. Even though I like Miguel Cabrera, and I just stated that I think his money will be well earned for like 5 years, which is good. I think it's good in the grand scheme of things. I think 5 years at his age is good. But I think younger players should be going for the Miguel Cabrera contract. I'm talking about, you know, when somebody's dominant at a young age, you know. Like, you knew, like, back when we were young, you knew Griffey was dominant.
Absolutely.
You know Mike Trout is dominant. You, truth be told, you may not see it yet, and that's why you can't pay him that money, but you know Bryce Harper is going to be a stud in X amount of years. You know this.
Bryce Harper's going to break the bank.
Yeah, you know
this. He's got Scott Boras. He's breaking the bank.
Yeah, you know it. Like, I say the same thing about Manny Machado. You know these guys will be great players and get paid a lot of money. So, how I look at it is like, all right, if I'm 25, if I'm 22 or 21, and I'm a runner up in MVP like almost 2 years in a row, oh, you best believe I'm getting my money. I'm getting my money. Yeah. So, in that regard, yeah, I'm all for Bryce Harper. I'm all for Mike Trout But I think he kind of, you know, his agent, they could have got a little bit more.
Yeah. But anyway, that's the end of the pregame. We're going to go to commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about DeSean Jackson potentially signing with the Washington football team.
Potentially great. This is great news, man. I mean, I just can't.
I mean, it's a multitude of things to talk about when it comes to him personally, you know, with his former team, the Philadelphia Eagles, and also going forward, will he be a fit for Washington football team?
We'll get into all that. It's the Urban Sports thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Time out! Okay, guys, Summers really had his bell rung and could have a concussion. I'm pulling him out for the game. Rodriguez, you're in for Summers.
Come on, coach. It's just a ding. I'll shake it off.
Yeah, he's tough. Plus, we need to win this to make the playoffs.
Listen, we're a team and we need to look out for each other. Concussions are serious. No game is more important than your health.
Take concussions out of play. If you're a coach, know the warning signs and never let athletes return to play before a healthcare professional says it's okay. A message from CDC.
Shout out to Urban Sports Team and Wally and Will. Love y'all. Appreciate y'all. Keep up the support. We'll keep the hits coming.
Thanks, Skylar. We love you, too.
Absolutely.
You know, you're looking real good, though. Skylar Diggins looking real good. You seen her late?
I have.
Oh, my gosh. She looking so
tremendous.
So womanly. I swear, I wish I was like 21, 22, I'd go for it.
You would go for it?
I'd go for it. I would try. At first, I would have tried to transfer to Notre Dame.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I would try to transfer. If my grades weren't good enough, I still would have tried to transfer. and let her have a game around here?
You going?
I'm talking about back then.
Oh.
But yeah, I'm going now. I ain't scared.
Yeah. I mean, when she comes into town this year, we should tweet her.
We should tweet her and so she can know, yeah, we trying to get an interview. And off some stalking type stuff. You know, we ain't trying to.
We want to meet her.
We want to meet her. Yeah. You know what I mean? I spoke to her over the phone. It was all good. It was all love.
Absolutely.
It was all love. She showed me love back then. Why can't you show me love again?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Show me love when I was like, I'm just about to sing some Mace Joint. Y'all weren't even ready for that. Go ahead.
But anyway, back from commercial break, DeSean Jackson potentially could be signing with the Washington football team.
But let me read some information
before we get there.
No, that's okay. You can listen to our show by visiting our official Urban Sports Scene website. It's www.walio.podbeam.com. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. You can listen to us on the Sports Crib Podcast Show on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Still a Fan. The show is produced by West Coast Still a Fan. And also our phone lines are open, so please call in. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904.
All right.
Now you can get to it. My bad.
No problem. Mm-hmm. DeSean Jackson, you're a Redskins fan.
You know it.
Are you excited about his potential signing with the team?
I'm excited, obviously. This is a need. We haven't had a guy who can, you know, blow the roof off the field or the table, whatever the term is.
Lift the top off the defense.
Thank you. Lift the top off the defense. Thank you, Wilty. Lift the top off the defense since, to me, Santana, when Santana was younger. And this is what he reminds me of. And this is the thing that annoys me about fans. It's like you forget. When we got Santana, folks were like, why'd you get Santana Moss? Like, people said this when Joe Gibbs went to get Santana Moss. Why'd you get Santana Moss? He's a small guy. You know, hasn't really proved that he's dominant with the Jets. You know, he had a couple good seasons, but it wasn't really dominant. And Joe Gibbs got him, utilized him, and he was like a 1,300, 1,400-yard receiver that first year. DeSean Jackson has some of the same qualities a young Santana had. Obviously, run after the catch is there. You give him a screen pass, he can take it to the house. A deep ball, I mean, he can run down almost any deep ball. So we're looking at a guy who's just explosive. You know, as the former Eagles fan, what this man can bring to the table.
Absolutely. I know what he can bring to the table, and I also know what he can take away from a team also. There was a report that came out literally like an hour before the Philadelphia Eagles cut him that he allegedly has gang ties.
We'll get to that later because there's some little.
Well, no, I want to speak. I want to speak on it now.
Yeah, go ahead.
To me, I just find it. odd that a team would, you know, if you want to cut the guy, cut him. You know, if he's a headache in the locker room, if he has a huge salary cap number and you think you can get better value to build out your roster, cut him. If he is a cancer in the locker room, a team killer, cut him. If you feel as if you can find someone else to replace him because you brought in Darren Sproles, then cut him. But to kind of insinuate that you cut him because of gang ties, alleged gang ties, I'll be sure to make sure I say the word alleged, it's kind of defamating on his character. You mean to tell me for 6 years he's been in Philadelphia, 5 years under Andy Reid, 1 year under Chip Kelly, that all of a sudden now he has alleged gang ties because he has a $10 million cap hit and you want to get rid of him? And to me, not only that, it's something foul about the situation that you would cut a guy who has alleged gang ties, but you would keep a guy who went on camera during this past summer and used very derogatory and racial slurs against a security guard and also threatened to kill him. But you would reward that guy with a 5-year, $25 million contract. And you kept him on your roster because you needed him at the time because of the injury to Jeremy Maclin. To me, this whole thing just stinks to high heaven. And it's kind of it's funny business to me, and it kind of makes me wonder, you know, what the Eagles are doing in that front office. You know, I understand that, you know, Chip Kelly, you know, to me it seems like Chip Kelly, he's kind of smelling himself a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, he's had success with his offense in the NFL. Now he's doing what most coaches do. He's kind of thinking, well, it's my way or the highway. It's my system that wins football games and not the players. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out for Philadelphia going into next season. And also it'll be interesting to see if this thing works out for the Washington Redskins if he signs with the team. As reported, you know, he came in, I believe, yesterday, hung out with some of the players, talked to RG3, talked to D'Angelo Hall.
Hang on, Wale.
Yeah, hung out with Wale. And then today he was at Redskins Park. There's reports that he's left Redskins Park for the day.
They say he's still in D.C., though.
They say he's in D.C., and his agent's also in D.C. So depending on how the Redskins structure this contract, because he had a cap hit of $10.5 million. He was, I think, the fifth highest paid wide receiver at the end of this year. And he went out and made statements that at the end of last year that I want to redo my contract. So I think that led somewhat into him being cut also. So it'd be interesting to see how they go about the signing, because to me you have two guys in that Washington organization who've done things vastly different, mm-hmm. meaning the GM and the owner.
Yeah.
As we know, Bruce Allen's kind of frugal.
It's cheap.
He's cheap. He wants to get player. He wants to get great value. That's what the terms people use to describe some of his signings. Daniel Snyder, we all know when he sees a player that he wants and he thinks can help this team on the field and also off the field, will pay, and he will pay greatly.
What's the issue with that?
No, he shouldn't have an issue. But it'd be interesting to see just how the contract is structured. Me personally, I think the guy probably will want something like, and guaranteed money, probably at least $13 million guaranteed the first year, and how the rest of the contract is structured. It'd be interesting to see, but what do you think? What do you think is there a risk-reward? As a Redskins fan, do you think it's high risk, high reward, or you just think this is a signing that you have to get done?
It's a signing you have to get done. I don't look at it high risk or high, you know, a high risk, high reward type thing. I just think it's a contract that needs to be done. It's a need. And we always talk, and it's funny, we always talk about the Redskins need a playmaking wide receiver. This is it. You know, Pierre Garçon, you can blame it on Robert Griffin III or whatever, but he was more of a possessionary wide receiver. Obviously, he caught some things that he can go, but you got a guy that defenses are now going to be scared of. Like, when Pierre Garçon's on the field, they respect him, but they don't fear him of making that big play 24-7. It's a difference. You see DeSean Jackson, a safety's over top. Automatically, you know, you got Pierre Garçon. Every once in a while, you feel confident your corner can probably check him one-on-one. But with the speed of DeSean Jackson, even with the premier cornerbacks in the NFL, a safety will probably be over top because he has not just speed. There's a difference between speed and electric speed. Because, you know, people always say, like, all right, well, the Redskins have speed. They have Aldrick Robinson, who's really fast. Aldrick Robinson isn't an electric. He's not electric speed fast. He's fast, but he's not electric fast. And obviously he's not a game changer because he drops everything. But Deshaun is a playmaking demon, a guy who can cast the ball, make some shakes, and go. And you could tell when Deshaun Jackson gets the ball in his hand on a reception or whatever, reverse, defenses are scared. You know what I mean? They don't even square up. They don't even square up correctly. So Deshaun Jackson, to me, brings an element of fear. And what is that going to do? That's going to help out Alfred Morris. Now, Alfred Morris, he definitely won't see eight in the box with Deshaun Jackson out there.
Yeah, just kind of piggybacking off what you said, to me, I can only think of probably like three players off the top of my head at the wide receiver position that if you get them the ball in open space or anywhere on the field, can take it to the house. Probably Jacoby Ford, Cordell Patterson, and Deshaun Jackson just off of the top of my head. those three guys are real speedsters, and you would love to give them an open space. So Washington football fans should be hoping that they make this signing. And he's the type of player that can really transform this offense if you think about it, because you'll have Deshaun Jackson and Pierre Garçon on the outside, potentially have Andre Roberts or Santana Moss in the slot.
Yeah, Andre
with George Reed.
That's the main thing.
And then you have Alfred Morris. And then also anyone who paid attention in college knows that Christian Thompson is electric when he gets the ball. Yeah, when he gets the ball in his hand.
Hey, remember Roy Halua, folks.
Roy Halua also.
A lot of people talk about Thompson, and I seen him in preseason, and I saw him in Florida State, and he ain't knocking my socks off. I'm not really that impressed with him. But everybody talks about him. Jay Gruden likes him, so that's cool. But, you know, don't forget about Roy Halua. That's a guy who does run a 4-3 too as well. And he's a guy who's hard to bring down. So we have a lot of options when it comes to the running back situation. But this team has, I mean, offensively, you know, I think getting Deshaun Jackson, you need to help out RG3. Like, obviously he's coming off a season that he didn't play well. Just make it easy on him. Let's not make him have to be spectacular. Let's make it easy for him when you have spectacular players. If you have spectacular players, it makes RG3 look better. Same thing with Kaepernick. Kaepernick looks spectacular because he has players who are going to make plays for him, a la Vernon Davis, a la Michael Crabtree, a la
Anquan Boldin,
who makes everybody look good. I don't care how slow he is. So, like, get people in here that can make RG3 look good.
You did that with Andre Roberts.
Andre Roberts, who?
just give me a hard time.
Andre Roberts?
No.
When we signed him, I was like, what?
Well, I went down a long list of reasons why the Philadelphia Eagles might have decided to jettison him. Mm. Do you think that criticism of him has been unfair?
I think it's very unfair. I mean, you see guys out here in football who have a real bum rap sheet. And, like, somebody like... Like, I'm so mad at ESPN. I did the outside of lines thing. As soon as he was cut, talk about how he has gang or, you know, he has relationships with gangs and things of that sort. Let me be real with you, okay? All right, let's be real. Deshaun Jackson is from LA, South Central. I believe it's like Southern California side. Mm-hmm. All right. If memory serves me correctly, he was under, I think, Snoop. Was he under the whole Snoop's team back then when he was younger? He's on that side. It's a big gang related. It's a big gang environment. You're going to have 9 times out of 10, you're going to have friends who are in that lifestyle.
I'll take it a step further. We're from the Washington D.C. area, PG County to be exact.
Yeah, exactly.
Two relatively young Black African American males.
Yeah.
We didn't grow up in the best of neighborhoods.
Not at all.
During the time growing up, we had association with people who may not have decided to go the correct path in life.
Yeah, I agree.
And probably still, we still do maintain relationships with those people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's unfair if you were to judge us on the relationships with the people we keep around us that we've known since we were young.
Since we were kids, exactly.
And to insinuate anything about us. As with Deshaun Jackson, he's never been arrested. He's never... he doesn't have a long rap sheet. So I think it's kind of unfair and unjust for anyone to make any unfair come to any unfair judgments on him or his character when it comes to relationship with certain people who have certain ties to certain things. Now, if he kept those people, if they were always around
the Eagles
organization, the facilities, if there were numerous occasions where DeSean Jackson was in trouble with those guys, then you can start to point the finger. You can bring them in and say, hey, you know, what you doing? What you going on?
You
need to calm down. You may need to break some of the association with some of the people you have around you. But since he hasn't, and a lot of the criticism on him is, unjustified to this point.
And I totally agree with you. This is what annoys me about it. And also, let me take it one step further. I think it's easy to single him out. And you mentioned, the Riley Cooper thing or whatever. But to me, these are the things he has going on, and this is why people want to chastise him, say he's like an evil individual, he's a bad seed. He's a young black dude from the hood. That's what it is. I'm sorry. It's from the hood. He has he has friends who like you said, being that, you're going to have friends.
That's questionable
friends.
You're going to
have it. Yeah, you're going to have it. And to me, at the end of the day, I commend the person, as long as it doesn't change the way they think and how they view their lives and how they act. I always commend the person who's loyal to his friends, regardless of what they do in life. You're loyal to your friends, because that shows loyalty is a big thing to me. So he's loyal to his friends. He's not getting in their situation. He's not cutting them off. He's still being a friend to them. He has one of his friends on his rap label. He's not put in a situation. He's not putting himself in a situation to do better. How come we're not talking about DeSean Jackson, the guy who helped out with the whole bullying campaign? How come we're not talking about that? But we're talking about maybe he has ties with a gang. But we never mentioned DeSean Jackson helped comfort this kid. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about DeSean Jackson as a gangster.
Yeah, but okay. But there's a duality to this, to the argument.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take now, personally, off the field, I don't think he has any questions. He's unscathed, no scratches, anything like that. You can't question his off the field activity or his personal life. But there's an incident in Philadelphia. Not even that. Not in his personal life. I'm talking about
on the field.
In the locker room.
Okay.
Andy Reid had to bench him for one game. He was consistently late to meetings. In the locker room, there have been reports that he's been kind of a me-first, kind of cancer type of player.
What position does he play? Been known for that.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying, those are things that if you were going to talk about, him as far as, not being a good fit for a team, to me, those are things you would bring up. But don't try to assassinate his character, especially when none of it is concrete. You have no absolute out in Philadelphia as far as in the locker room being late to meetings, getting suspended because of his lack of hustle or play. And also, not kind of buying in 100% to Chip Kelly's system or way of doing things. Those are things that I think people should be concentrating on when you try John Jackson. Don't talk about his personal life and things that, kind of unfounded and you don't have any proof. That's what frustrates me the most situation.
This is how it is. And I look at it as like a dirty tactic, trying to ruin his value maybe because, he had a bad relationship with Chip Kelly. This is how I look at it, Just say you wanted to cut him. Chip Kelly and him didn't get along. Just say you wanted to cut him. That's fine with me. Chip Kelly is a different cat. He's a different beast. He thinks he's like that disciplinarian dude. I don't need you. My system can work without you. Yeah. All right, that's fine. If you don't need DeSean Jackson, that's fine. But all this other stupid stuff that comes to play, because I'm going to be real with you. DeSean Jackson was the same dude they drafted. The same dude they drafted out of Cali.
There were questions about him going back to the University of California. Berkeley.
This person, he's nothing. Nothing has changed. He's the same person. He got more money. That's it. He's the same dude. So I don't want to hear that. All right, because this gang related, he's probably had those friends before.
Yeah, that's. I guess that's the thing that puzzles me the most about this situation. He's been in Philadelphia for 6 years. So you just mean to tell me, after 6 years, you're just finding out he has questionable relationships with people or supposed gang affiliations? I don't believe that. I just think that's just a PR some PR to spend to give to justify the reason for cutting a guy who was an all-pro wide receiver last year.
Because they know, be real, they know that their fans would be a little ticked off if they just cut him without any true reason. Just say, okay, well, you know, DeSean Jackson, we had to cut him because of a salary hit. We had to cut him. The fans would be like, well, we couldn't make adjustments because of it. We couldn't make any adjustments. We signed, so you're going to sign Riley Cooper or DeSean Jackson? That's how they're going to look at it because they know DeSean Jackson's more of a playmaker than a Riley Cooper. And then you're coming off of Macklin, and I don't get me started. Macklin, who I do like, is coming off injury. So they can rely off Macklin, who came off a blown knee, to really be the individual to stretch defenses out so people like Riley Cooper can run underneath. It's going to be a challenge.
It's going to be a challenge. And as I've always said, if people don't remember, Philadelphia, they won this year with a 10-6 record, but the previous year they were like 4-12. So they were the recipients of a fairly easy schedule this year.
Uh-huh.
So this year, too, and Chip Kelly will really determine just how great his system is and how good of a coach he is because he's going to play a tougher schedule, and they play the NFC West this year. So it'll be interesting to see how that plans out for Philadelphia. But
I'm going to read some tweets, but you want to
go ahead.
All right, so real quick. Go ahead. We're talking.
Another question for you. As you know, Washington and Philadelphia have a very storied and interesting past when it comes to player acquisitions dating back to, 3 years ago?
Of course.
April 1st?
April 1st?
No, excuse me. It was Easter.
Okay.
It was Easter Day when Donovan McNabb was traded to the Washington Redskins. An in-division trade. A lot of people questioned.
It was a trade, yes.
It was a trade that a lot of people questioned, like, why would the Redskins, why would Philadelphia give up Donovan McNabb and send him to the Eagles for to the Redskins for relatively little compensation? Now the Eagles cut DeSean Jackson, and the first place he visits is the Washington Redskins. Do you think that's possibly history can repeat itself, that the Eagles know something? Maybe he lost a step or something. That's why they gave him up, or...
Well, we know it's not him losing the step. We just had this long discussion over, you know, what he can still bring to the table. This is different. This is a different situation for the Redskins. I'm looking at it for the Redskins standpoint. He's 27. Donovan McNabb was a little bit over. It was over 30. He's still looking at the tape before the season before. He still intimidated defenses. And if you look how he played against us, he intimidated our defense.
He's a Redskin beater.
He's a Ray Rice type dude. You know,
he's beat up the Redskins.
He's beat up the Redskins. He beat it up on it in the elevated type stuff. I mean, really. I mean, seriously. So at the end of the day, you're looking at a guy who still has his ability. He hasn't had any major injuries. Still young. I think, obviously, like you said, I think to me, in my opinion, Chip Kelly is not Andy Reid. All right. So let's look at it that way. Chip Kelly got rid of DeSean Jackson. He's not Andy Reid. Andy Reid is a good assessment of talent. That's a different dude, all right? He really is. Andy Reid has players who play for him. He's a good assessment of talent. People know Alex Smith. He brought Alex Smith to Kansas City, and the offense took off with Alex Smith as his quarterback. So he knows what he can win with. Chip Kelly, he had a good season last year. Nick Foles was a guy that – it wasn't like he said, I'm going with Nick Foles. From the get-go,
mm-hmm.
Michael Vick had to get hurt so Nick Foles can take the job.
Right.
So it's not like Chip Kelly already knew and already believed in Nick Foles off the bat. You know what I mean?
True.
So it's not hard to say, all right, he can make a mistake by letting DeSean Jackson go and just being a little bit too arrogant and say, okay, my offense is still going to work without you, to a point where, all right, well, dang, I'm losing this guy. He's not thinking, I'm going to lose this guy, a guy who intimidates defenses. I don't think people understand how important that is, a guy who can intimidate a defense. It's bigger than anything. Just because his name says Jackson 10 on the back of his jersey, defenses are going to play him a particular way. Now, since he's gone, they're going to say, okay, Macklin, you have to prove to us that you can beat us. You're coming off that ACL injury. You're going to have to prove to us. Riley Cooper, what you did last season was fine. But this season, we don't got to worry about DeSean Jackson. We can focus on you a little bit more. You know what I mean? So that's the thing. So that's how I look at it. It's a different situation. Don McNabb. You can see the writing on the wall. I mean, you know, I think for Redskins fans, we looked at him as an upgrade regardless. That's what it was.
Absolutely. I talked about it a little bit in my comments while you were away from the microphone.
Exactly, going back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah, you're going back and forth. some people say, you know, it's I'm trying to mince my words, but there's no way to put it. A lot of people going to look at this as you let go of a young black male because he had questionable gang ties or questionable relationships.
Yeah.
No police record, but you decided to keep a guy who used a derogatory racial slur.
This is why Will T is not an Eagles fan anymore, folks. I'm telling you right now.
on video.
Yeah.
Some people will say that maybe race plays a little bit into this situation. What do you think?
Race. Oh, that's a good one. Do I think the Eagles organization is
I'm not going to say racist because obviously they employ.
Are you talking about Chip Kelly then?
Well, I'm just going to say, I'll say this. It's funny. It's kind of telling of how you view African Americans if you keep a guy around who use the ninja word with the ER and followed it up with death threats. Give him a 5-year, $25 million contract. Keep him around just because you needed him. You didn't have any other viable options at that time. And your justification was he made a mistake and, you know, thus far he hasn't lived up to his potential. So we want to give him the opportunity to correct that mistake and live up to his potential as a player on the field. Then a year later, a guy, young African-American male who has questionable relationships to potential gang members, has come out and said that he wants a new contract. He's never been arrested, but you decide to release him. To some, the perception could be that maybe race played a role
in this
decision.
I didn't think about that. That's even deeper than that.
And this decision. Yeah, I'm a deep thinker.
Yeah, you know what? It could.
Some could say
it could.
That race played or
the perception of it
is race maybe played a role in it. And also just because of your handling of the whole Riley Cooper situation, you may be insensitive in certain dynamics when it comes to African-American.
You know what? I would be interested to see how DeSean Jackson would feel about it if someone posed that question to him.
Maybe once he signs the contract, we'll tweet him.
Yeah, retweet him. I always tweet him anyway. I'm tweeting because he's going to sign this contract. I tweet him to make sure he comes to D.C. And look at him now.
He listens to me. All
right, real quick, I tweet folks if they were for or against, you know, DeSean Jackson coming to D.C. My man Brandon Rogers at King_Broj said absolutely for the right dollar. He brings a lot to your team on the field. My man Stocky Rocky said, y'all, yeah, all day. Also on our Urban Sports Team Facebook page, same question. My man Ramus needs their time for the old school Danny Boy to fire up the jet and fly him tomorrow. I sent this out yesterday. Said tomorrow and open up the endless checkbook. It's well with me. We want 2,000 Snyder back for 1 week at least. I think a lot of fans believe. A lot of fans are for that. They're for Daniel Snyder open up the wallet.
Absolutely.
And I
think it'll be telling. You'll know just how much Daniel Snyder was included in these negotiations
once the contract is
signed. If it has a relatively early out that safeguards the Redskins, then we know Bruce Allen played a big role in negotiating the contract. But if it doesn't, we know Dan Snyder had his hands all over.
I had no problem. He does it. My man Travis Chase said, "Man, look, if Andy Reid passed on D. Jackson, it had to be for a reason."
I think that had more to do with clashing the personalities inside the locker room, and also,
and the money he's going to command, though, right?
Yeah, the money he's going to command. A lot of people think that you'll be able to get, and when he initially was released and then there were reports that he was coming to Washington, a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, we'll be able to sign him for a 1-year, $6 million contract. No, you're not.
No, you're not.
You're getting a 27-year-old in his prime, all-pro wide receiver coming off of his best season statistically.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. All right, my man Quentin Cold Billy Jones said, Reed ain't passed. They don't have the dough. That's what I'm saying. He was referring to my man Travis. That's what I'm talking about. Quentin. They ain't had the money to sign him.
Yeah,
they had the money to sign him. So, my man Ron wasn't a fan of this either. Man, Ron Watkins Jr. I said your whole government. He wasn't for DeSean Jackson. Screw you, Ron. If you listen to the show, My homie, though, but still screw you. DeSean Jackson's a perfect fit for this team. The money's going to be right. He should be on the squad. Anybody who has that negative say about him, meet the man personally. I haven't. That's why I don't judge him personally.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. But on a side note,
yeah,
the Redskins did make a signing late last night, and that was they're bringing back Ryan Clark.
Great move.
Great move. Gives this team solid leadership, even though it's a one-year deal. You don't know how much he has left. And he has probably more range as a center fielder back there than the rest of the safeties that the Redskins currently have on their roster.
Well, I don't know. I mean, to me, Phillip Thomas, I think he'll be good for Phillip Thomas, who missed the whole year last season. I think by having a guy like Ryan Clark, who mentored and helped out Sean Taylor before he left to go to Pittsburgh, did a good job with Sean Taylor. I think he can do a good job with Phillip Thomas and help him out, even with Kari Rambo. You get a guy who, you know, if you look at Ryan Clark, even on ESPN, you can tell this guy's mature. This guy's about being a leader. And also, he does fill a void, the London Fletcher being gone, a leader in the locker room, which this team does need. So I think Ryan Clark is going to be very beneficial to the Washington Redskins on the field and off the field. I think he'll be a teacher. He'll be a motivator. He'll be a leader. And he'll definitely be a guy that the safeties can learn from. And, you know, I think you'll see improvement, which we didn't see last season. And he's going to also give him some real encouragement to me, because he's like a coach out there. And the one thing about Shanahan as the head coach of the team is even when we were terrible, but at the end of the season when there's nothing to play for, you're still inactivating the Bakari Rambo. This is a time for this kid to get some play so he can know we need to work on the off season and to improve himself. So I like the signing of Ryan Clark. I mean, to be honest with you, I would have preferred getting Champ Bailey and moving him in safety, but that's just me. I'm a minority in this. Nobody
total
wants to listen
minority.
To me. Hey, Champ Bailey in safety, man. I'm telling you. Why? Somebody going to sign him in safety, and everybody going to be like, damn, Wally, you right. Because he could have been like Rod Woodson. But it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, but it's okay. I totally agree with you. I don't think, to be honest with you, Ryan Clark shouldn't have went anywhere in the first place.
Yeah,
he should have never left to go
same
to Pittsburgh.
Same thing for Antonio Pierce.
Yeah, I said those two guys should have retired as Redskins.
Should never left.
Yeah, I think it's a great signing. He comes back, brings leadership to this team, and you know, hopefully he has something left in the tank. But we'll be back for a commercial break after this. And when we come back, we'll be talking NCAA basketball.
It's the urban sports scene
for ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Morning, it's me, Magic Johnson here. I won 5 NBA championships and Olympic gold medal. So I'm calling the shots today. Get up out of bed, into school, try hard, do well. School got me to where I am today. So be there every single day and, of course, give it your best shot.
Young, like a video. Go ahead, Will. Go ahead.
Nah, I'm not.
And you'll always stay cold.
We're back from commercial break. Now we're going to talk about the the thing that's captivated everyone for the past 2 weeks.
It took over my life. It took 2 days off work for this crap.
It consumed a lot of people's lives.
Yeah.
A lot of people were less productive at work.
Some people didn't go to work.
But what I'm talking about is the NCAA tournament and the NCAA tournament. And as of this weekend, we'll be having the Final Four. Magic Johnson, during the commercial break, he was very disappointed on Sunday because his alma mater, Michigan State, surrendered the lead to the Connecticut Huskies. Connecticut Huskies, and they came up short. Yeah. This was actually the first senior class in the history ever since Tom Izzo's been a coach that hasn't made it to the Final Four. A lot of people were predicting that team to win a national championship once they became healthy. Obviously, that won't happen, but let's rewind a little bit.
That's cool. Hey, either way, you were going with good flow. You want to start with that? We can start with that. Ain't a big deal.
No. We'll talk about that. Let's stay on this.
Yeah, you stay on this. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Did you watch any of the game?
Yeah, I did, actually. I watched it because, actually, I was in Columbia Mall. Because I was watching that, the P.F. Chang.
Okay.
And I was watching it, and Shabazz, you know, Shabazz is the new Kemba Walker.
I totally agree with you.
I mean, I'm going one step further. I liked him before. Memory serves me correctly. Was he on the team?
He was on the team. All right, with Kemba Walker.
I liked him over Kemba, and I still like him over Kemba. I think Kemba Walker is one of the. I think Shabazz is just as good as Kemba Walker, maybe even better. I think he's more of a flat out shooter. When he sets his man up for a J, he's automatic. He give him a look, and he can get to the rack. He got the pat to get to the rack. So I'm a fan of Shabazz Napier. I think Shabazz Napier. He was this good last season, and I'm glad he's getting the attention he deserves now. Now he's getting that attention to a point where people are saying, this Shabazz Napier could be a first-round pick. He should definitely be a first-round pick. I watched him in the Big East tournament last year and even throughout the regular season. That team, that UConn team last season, it wasn't talented. That kid carried that team. He did the same thing in this tournament. He's doing the same thing in this tournament. He has carried this team, and him and Kevin Ollie should be commended on the job they're doing right now for that team.
I agree with you. As a lot of people have stated in the past, you know, strong guard play is what takes you over the top in the tournament. Shabazz Napier has definitely helping to feed that along. He's played great for UConn this year. More specifically in the tournament, he's led that team, made big shot after big shot after big shot. He's played great defense, on the ball defense. So, congratulations to UConn to make it to the Final Four. I know that broke a lot of people's brackets.
It broke my bracket.
Yeah, I totally didn't expect UConn to make it this far.
Yeah.
I had them going out against St. Joe's.
UConn, I think I did too. No, I did not. I had them losing, I had them losing Villanova.
Oh, okay.
I had them losing Villanova.
All right. Also, what are your thoughts so far of this tournament?
Of the tournament?
Yeah.
I think this has been one of the best tournaments I've ever seen in my life, to be honest with you. These games have been so tight. I mean, so how many overtime games in the first day of the tournament? And obviously, I got to watch all of them because I didn't go to work. they were so tight. I'm talking about even for a little bit, I want to say American U was playing Wisconsin. You know, Wisconsin eventually blew them out. They competed for a while.
That game was very tight.
Yeah, for a while. Albany and Florida. Like, they competed for a while. It just shows the parity of college basketball. It really does. This tournament was something in terms of, what am I missing? Sorry, I guess we had like a stoppage. Hold on, sorry. In terms of the tournament itself, I think it's been one of the best tournaments of in a while.
Yeah, from a competitive standpoint and a viewing standpoint, it's been one of the better tournaments. During that first round, you had three of the number 12 seeds knocking off the number 5 seeds. You had Stephen F. Austin.
They knocked off VCU.
They knocked off VCU. Then you also had I can't think off the top of my head.
What are you talking about?
Number 12 seeds that beat the number 5 seeds. But you had a team like Tennessee who had to play in one of the play-in games, mm-hmm. make it all the way to the Elite Eight, and almost had the chance to pull it off against Michigan. You had a team such as I'm drawing total blanks here.
Who are you talking about?
I'm just talking about, you know, teams upset.
You had North Dakota State beating, who North Dakota State beat? Because they're on my bracket.
Both drawing blanks here.
No, this it's not that complicated. North Dakota State beat a team that they shouldn't have lost. It's North Dakota State. Who they lose to? Who they beat? Okay, lost to San Diego State. Who was it before San Diego State?
I have no idea, my man.
It's called. I'm gonna check my bracket right now.
I'll let you continue to check your bracket. Yeah, but not only that, but then you have this young Kentucky team.
Yeah,
that a lot of people really didn't think would make it this far. I know I didn't. I actually thought that Wichita State would knock them off.
And be honest with you, they should have knocked them off. It wasn't for a couple lucky shots.
Yeah, absolutely.
Off the backboard type shots.
But speaking about Kansas. They play Wisconsin on Saturday.
You mean Kentucky, not Kansas.
Excuse me. Yeah.
Kentucky. Kansas disappointed.
Yeah, Kansas definitely disappointed. Well, they didn't disappoint me.
No, they disappointed. I know they disappointed the masses of the Andre the Wiggins, the Andrew Wiggins factor.
Yeah, Andrew Wiggins. I think a lot of people definitely
he was exposed.
He got exposed. His, you know, a lot of people would definitely be criticizing him and saying, you know, he didn't step up in the biggest game that he played this year without Joel Embiid. You know, if he's supposed to be the number one overall pick, he was supposed to come out and dominate.
He was supposed to show
put
out.
His team on the back on his back, which he didn't.
To be honest with you, he was supposed to show out and he didn't. That's just being real. He was supposed to show out and he didn't. Then you also you got Dayton Flyers. Upsetting first Ohio State.
I called that one. I had that one.
All right, so you called the second one too?
What? Oh no, against Syracuse?
Yeah,
no.
You called that one?
No, I didn't have that one.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. When does it matter?
But
like, I called. You know what? I called that one.
Yeah, I did call that one.
I called that one. 85%,
baby.
Oh, you like Ray now?
Yeah.
Don't do that crap. Don't do that crap. Ray said what's up too. I meant to tell you that.
Oh yeah, tell if I know you're probably not listening, but
Ray be listening every once in a while.
Yeah, but anyway,
Ray's online. See, I'm sure he is listening. Actually, Ray's online.
Oh, okay, but speaking of impressive freshmen, let's get back to Kentucky. They have five freshmen this year. They play Wisconsin. To me, a Wisconsin team that I didn't think. Even though I saw them play during the year, I thought this was a typical Bo Ryan team that would go out early, that wanted to keep the game relatively close in the 50s, maybe in the 60s, play tough defense.
Oklahoma. North Dakota State beat Oklahoma. I'm sorry. Derek. Or I'm sorry. You can continue now.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
Wanted to play in the 50s, in the hot, maybe into the 60s. Good jump shooting team, tough on the interior. I didn't expect this Wisconsin team to advance this far. And then you have Kentucky, five great freshmen who are playing out of their mind. You know, the Harrison twins over the past couple of months.
They've been ruining my money.
Yeah, they have. They've been really clutch.
Beat Michigan. They ruined my money. Seriously. All jokes. I was going to win the money until they, like, Michigan would have got to, I would have won. Like, Michigan, Michigan would have got to, I expect Michigan to beat Wisconsin. I expect that to happen. I would have won. Either way, I just needed Michigan. Yeah, that was this close. But what happened? Some stupid little lucky this Kentucky thing. Like Calipari and his little team.
Calipari, he has his model for getting his team to the Final Four, which is recruitment. Let them go for 1 year, then bring in the next top five freshmen. And, you know, sometime during in between that point, mold them into the team. And when the tournament time gets here, have them play exceptionally. But are you surprised at what Kentucky did to get to the Final Four? Because to me personally, their draw had to be one of the toughest to make it to the Final Four can remember in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, because that's what Wichita State's draw.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the toughest. I'm going to say it again. They screwed Wichita State and put in that draw for a team of what they did. But at the same time, you knew the committee was going to do it. But Kentucky did. They went I believe an 8 or the 9 seed. They were the 8 seed?
8 seed.
As an 8 seed to knock off Wichita State, then to knock off Louisville, to knock off Michigan. I mean, it's impressive, man. It really is. It's like you went against three giants.
And slayed them all.
And slayed them.
Barely, but you
still,
slayed
you did
them.
It. You know what I mean? You did it. And you were talking about freshmen. These are upper class. These teams are grown men.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And you could tell if you really break it down, if you watch the tournament for what it is, teams who have seniors usually typically, and if you got like a young squad, you typically can bully them. And this Kentucky team, what I was impressed with, they played tough. They didn't let the upperclassmen bully them around. I mean, look, for instance, watch San Diego State and see what they was doing and all these other to these teams in the tournament to get to where they were. They were bullying teams. Arizona for a little bit. They was bullying Arizona, but Arizona had more talent. They bullied a lot of teams to get where they need to get to in the tournament.
I didn't believe in Arizona for one minute.
Should have won. You should have. They look good. That Wisconsin thing was so fluke.
Nah, I actually had them. I had San Diego State beat.
Of course you did. Yeah, Arizona's good. You see what I'm talking
about? For
a while, San Diego State was
good. Exactly. Outside of the last 5 minutes.
You know what happens? It's called talent. Talent prevails. Overall,
Nick Johnson got lucky.
Nick Johnson, it was Nick Johnson. He made that one. The dunk. Only guy was a dunk. Let's be honest. Okay,
but Nick Johnson, he was pretty much scoreless until that point, though.
Okay, let me say he got fouled. All right, no, he had a dunk. He made like one three, I believe. That three was big. That three was big. And there was all the rest was free throws, just free throws. But for me, like that. And let me get to that Michigan. Let me go to that Michigan. Not Michigan. That Wisconsin. I'm sorry. the Arizona game, the Arizona Wisconsin game. We'll go to that game real quick.
Okay.
One, I'm pissed off at the referee in that game.
Why?
Because you do not call that call. I mean, you know it's a made-up call, but you don't call that call. Even though they had a made-up call after that, you do not call that call during the end of the game, especially when two people are and they're both fouling each other, to be totally honest with you.
You talk about the Nick Johnson call?
Yeah, you don't call. In the last seconds, you don't call that call.
Well, if you're going by the rule book.
The other guy fouled him, too.
The other guy fouled him, but you know, he had two. It's kind of two negatives on Nick Johnson's part. One, he dipped his shoulder. And two, he also it's a difference if you give him that little bump, but to extend your arm all the way, that's two. You almost had to call it. I understand what you're saying. You know, the ref should never determine the outcome of the game in the last seconds of the game.
Shouldn't.
Especially a game of this magnitude, yeah, exactly. The NCAA tournament.
You got to keep your whistle in. If that dude was playing solid defense and that play was made, then I agree. And also, you break it down, that dude flopped too. The defender flopped.
Just a tad bit.
He flopped. No, he flopped. He essentially he hyped a little bit more. He hyped a little bit too much. But that's just my opinion. He hyped it. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. But we kind of talked about the path for Kentucky and Wisconsin to get here. Out of both of them, which one are you more surprised that they've reached this point?
I'm more surprised in Wisconsin. Sounds kind of funny. I'm actually way more surprised at Wisconsin. I just didn't think Wisconsin would be able to do what they're doing right now. I don't believe in Wisconsin. I don't believe in Bo.
I don't believe in Bo Ryan Ball.
I don't.
His
I
style
don't.
Of play.
It bores the hell out of me. Usually, that's why I had him knocked out. I had Oregon beating him.
That's what I had also.
I had Oregon beating him. I didn't think they could score with Oregon.
Me neither. That was a close game also.
Yeah, but eventually, you know, truth be told, eventually he got his way.
Yeah, Bo Ryan is he's starting to, you know, he's. This may be the team that makes lot of people think differently of the style of play that he plays and his way of culture.
They said they said this season, and this was this team for him was a team that could score. It was different than the other team offensively. So, I mean, I still not a big believer. I'm not a big believer in Bo Ryan, but you know,
let's talk about his counterparty though, John Calipari. Another Final Four with. All freshmen in the starting lineup. You know, he did it 2 years ago when he won a national championship with Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and those guys. If he advances or wins, do you think he should be mentioned as one of the all-time greats in college basketball?
It's hard to say because he stacks his roster. It's in an era, but he does it well. I mean, he's a master recruiter. So, I have to give him credit when credit's due. He is a master recruiter. So in that regard, we gotta give him credit. But at the end of the day, do I have that much respect for him as a
basketball mind?
I don't think so. I don't. I think he's this team here was super talented, so you couldn't get this team to play. I mean, all of them McDonald's All Americans, top-ish type players.
Yeah, he has six McDonald's All Americans.
Yeah, top players. I mean,
well, I'll say this because I was. As I told you, I've been reading Phil Jackson's 11 Rings book.
Phil Jackson's 11 Rings book.
As he mentioned, it's one thing to have to assemble talent, but it's one thing to make, but it's another as a coach to mold it into a team and get them all going with one vision and one direction at one time. Mm-hmm. So I will say this: John Calipari, even though he is a great recruiter, some people will question his. Basketball acumen, his ability to coach the game from X's and O's and strategy. But it takes a lot for a guy to be able to massage and mold five egos of guys who've been told ever since they've been 12 or 13 years old that you're the greatest thing and get them to go on one path at one time in one direction. So I will say this, you know, he may be the master car salesman, but he's also been able to motivate these young men and get them going in one direction. So you got to give him kudos for that.
Yeah, he gets kudos for getting about 8-10 great freshmen who probably gonna go pro, and then recycles them for eight more freshmen who are gonna go pro and make that team a championship team.
Obviously, so I think we're on. we view it from two different spectrums.
Phil Jackson, who I don't like either, likes to get the best like two players and then wins the championship. He's the best player and then has another player then wins the championship. It's not like Larry Brown or anything coaching. Sorry, team. But, I mean, I dig. I want to read that book, too. How to Win with a Loaded Ass Team. That's a great book in the world. It's the best book in the world to me.
But anyway, let's get back to the game this Saturday. Who do you think wins and why?
I'm going Kentucky. Kentucky, because Kentucky's the most talented team. And I'm going to go back to my theory in terms of basketball. If you who has the best player on the floor? The best, it's not, I mean, everybody's going to talk about Kaminsky. Is it Kaminsky?
Kaminsky, yeah.
Kaminsky for Wisconsin played great. But you got Randolph, to me, is the best talent on the floor. You got Randolph. Who is going to match up with Randolph?
Because he's
you going
mean to be Randall.
Randall. I'm sorry, Randall. Who's going to match up with Randall? The most physical, imposing player on the floor.
I know why you can confuse him with Zach Randolph. They played. Both games are similar.
Similar, right?
Left-handed. They play similar.
Yeah. Who is going to really stop Randall from doing what he's capable of doing? So, and then you got, like you said, the twins. I mean, it to me is an issue. And it's the athletic issue. If I'm Kentucky, I go man up on them and see if they can out-muscle me or get by me. I know I feel old, though. You know what I mean? I want to say this. I feel very, very old watching Wisconsin play.
Why do you say you feel old?
Because Jimmy Jackson's son plays for Wisconsin. And they make Jimmy Jackson like, his father played in the NBA. Jimmy Jackson was a bum. Like, Jimmy Jackson was a beast. Like, when Jimmy Jackson got drafted, it was like, Jimmy Jackson,
he was one of three best players
to come to, and he averaged 20 off the bat. Like, it's amazing. But I felt like, anyway, anytime I see Jimmy Jackson or Glenn Robinson's son, I feel old. But yeah, so I'm gonna go Kentucky.
This is a tough one for me because, as you know, I love team basketball. Wisconsin plays great team basketball, great team defense. Kentucky has superior talent, as we've seen. With their victories over, because I believe that Louisville and Wichita State were better, had played better team basketball than Kentucky. Mm-hmm. But as we saw, the talent won out at the end. So I'm gonna join you. I'm gonna go with Kentucky. I think Coach Calipari gets his second group of freshmen to the final game on Monday.
Yeah. I'm sorry, y'all. If y'all if the connection's going in and out, it's the server. But don't worry about it. We still rocking and rolling.
Yeah.
excuse me.
Let's go to our second game.
We already talked about the Shabazz, Napier, Kemba Walker comparison. Let's go to Florida. Let's talk more about Florida. We haven't really dived into Florida.
Great team. You know, they can play. They can win any style. You know, if you want to get up and down the floor, they can do that. If you want to make it grind it to a halt, play in the half court, they can do that. They play very good defense. Scotty Wilbekin has been one of the top point guards, not only during the season, but then during the NCAA tournament. Patrick Young on the inside is a man playing with boys. For those reasons, I think it's obvious who you know I'm going with. I'm going with Florida. I think Florida pulls this one out against UConn. I think UConn, they finally the glass slipper breaks for them.
Well, it's going to be hard. I'm going to say this much. First off, I'm going to say this. Florida has definitely been the best team in the tournament. They've played the best teams, and they came in as number one overall seed. So when we look at Florida, we have to say it. Like, all right, Florida was, you know, right now been the best team in the tournament. Now, would that also constitute for them to actually knock off UConn still be able to knock them off? I think UConn can do it. Like, you got Shabazz, who's playing at a high level, and Shabazz Napier playing at such a high level, and you're going against a star player. And it goes back to anything. Like, you see with Melo and Syracuse, you saw Kemba Walker, UConn. One man in the tournament can carry you. One man can do it.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing between college and pro. Pro, you know, everyone's a former, just about everyone's a former high school All-American or college All-American. In college, you need one great player to get hot, and you just need a guy who can get him the ball and a guy who can rebound. And you just need to play pretty good team defense, and you could go all the way.
And that's the thing. So we'll see how. Our server dropped. I don't know why it's dropped, but it's dropped. We'll see how how UConn can do and see if UConn can bounce back. I mean, UConn not bounce back. UConn can live up to the challenge and trying to take out this tough squad. But it's going to be hard. Florida is well coached. Ollie, Billy Donovan is one of the best coaches. I mean, truth be told, Billy Donovan may be the best coach in college basketball right now. So it's going to be interesting who's going to come out come out on top of that game.
Who do you got?
I'm gonna go with UConn. I think Kim goes. I'm gonna go UConn.
So Wally thinks it'll be UConn versus Kentucky on Monday night, yeah, and I have a rematch of the SEC championship game with Florida versus Kentucky.
Yeah, we'll see, and we'll see how it works out.
Yeah, we will. You stated that you didn't win, and
I didn't do well. I mean, I did well till the final, till the Elite Eight.
Who looks like they're gonna win?
It could be this chick named Ebony. It could be. I don't like it's going to be Fish, because Fish had Florida, but Fish had his Final Four teams all out, too. He had Arizona and Florida. That's a good question. Who else? I don't know. It's like
I'm sure you'll come back and tell us that Tuesday after the NCAA championship game who won it. But for now, let's go to commercial break. When we come back, we'll be talking professional basketball, starting off with the Washington, D.C. Wizards.
It's the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
My life is full of statistics. Thing is, I could have dropped out of school and become one myself, but I didn't, because I had people that believed in me. Here's another statistic. 7,000 students drop out every school day. That's one every 26 seconds. It's time that students know that we believe in them.
Inspire a student and share your message of support at boostup.org.
Stole. I played my cards and I didn't fold. Well, it ain't that hard when you got sold.
This is my world.
Somewhere I heard that life is a test. I've been through the worst, but I still get my best. God made my mold different from the rest. Then he broke that mold, so I know I'm blessed.
This is my world.
Stand up now and face the sun. Won't hide my tail or turn and run. It's time to do what must be done. Be a king when kingdom comes.
Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yes, I am, yes, I am.
The answers to the questions. I love the song. You could be the lesson. I'll be the teacher. Preacher. Sorry, I messed the song up.
Anyway, we're back from commercial break. Once again, if you want to call us, feel free to call in at 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. As I stated before the break, Washington Wizards.
Wizards.
They had a great opportunity last night in Charlotte to solidify a playoff spot. They were up during the second quarter. They went on a huge run. They were up
16.
They were up 16. They had like a 40-point. They scored 40 points in the second quarter. But ultimately, they choked. There's no other way to put it. John Wall didn't have his best of games. Andre Miller came in off the bench and definitely sparked the team.
Yeah, I didn't watch the game, but play. I heard.
Yeah, I watched the game. Well. Of course, you know I watched the game. Of course.
Oh, that's what's up, man. I didn't watch it. It's the Wizards.
Come on, man. Don't be like that towards the home team.
It's the Wizards.
Don't be like that.
It was yesterday, right? Monday. That was Monday. What was I doing? I was watching How I Met Your Mother, the series finale. That was a great show, sir. Such a great show.
I've never watched it a day in my life.
Hey, you should watch it. I wish I had the DVDs. I let you borrow all of them.
Okay. I'm passing on that. Just like you'll pass on the 11 rings. do you think this was a damning loss for them?
You lost to the Bobcats. You're in the Eastern Conference to a point where you need to dominate. You need to start dominating teams. And you want to propel yourself to a better seed. Right now, as I believe the seeds are constructed to this day.
They're the third seed.
The
sixth seed.
They'll be playing Toronto, which is a team that, to me, has had their number. So do Wizards fans really want to see the Wizards playing the Toronto Raptors, a team that can come into D.C. and beat them and beat them on the road?
I'll answer that question for you. Go ahead. Yes, compared to playing the Chicago Bulls, absolutely.
I actually think they match it better against the Bulls, to be totally honest with you.
I think seven games against the Bulls, I don't think this team necessarily fans out well. Playing playoff basketball against the Bulls, I don't think they pan out well. Playing playoff against the Toronto Raptors, a team that doesn't have as much experience in the playoffs, I think it's more of a toss-up. And even though they may match up better with the Bulls, I think they have a higher probability for winning a seven-game series in the playoffs against Toronto than the Bulls.
That's interesting. Because I think they can beat the Bulls. I don't think they match up against the Raptors. I think they'll do well. You know, if they can find a way to sneak into a fourth seed, they can get a chance to they can do well against somebody like the Brooklyn Nets. I think they match up decently against the Brooklyn Nets, who are playing good. Who are playing great basketball
ever since January.
Good job, Jason Kidd.
Jason Kidd's really turned that thing around.
Yeah, because he's a point guard. Point guards are good coaches. Point guard. Stop hating. Folks be hating on Jason Kidd.
All right. Anyway.
Because he got caught hitting a pole. Drunk. Sorry. Go ahead.
You had a flashback?
Yeah, I did.
We kind of talked about, you know, my level of comfort playing Toronto versus the Bulls. Let me ask you this question. If or when he does come back, referring to Nene, do you think that if he, well, let's say this, let's say he doesn't play anymore during the regular season. He comes back at the beginning of the playoffs. Do you think that just because obviously they've played a different style of basketball, do you think that messes with the team's chemistry, the style of ball that they've been playing, if Nene comes back in the first round opposed towards playing any games during the regular season?
Repeat that one more time. Sorry. I was reading something.
Because, you know, as you know, I don't know how much of the Wizards games you watched without
him. I watch enough.
We know that with him in the lineup, Nene, offense goes through him.
Yeah.
They've played a different style of a more free-flowing style of offense without him. Do you think that integrating him back into the starting lineup would mess up their style of play if he doesn't come back and play any during the regular season but plays during the first round?
They'll go back to what they're accustomed to doing with him in the lineup. So I guess they'll be the same as what it was with him in the lineup. They'll go back to running offense through Nene, to be honest with you, which I'm not even a fan of, to be totally honest with you. But they've done a lot of different things with Nene out. Obviously getting Drew Gooden, he's played well. Can't knock Drew Gooden. But you kind of forgotten about Kevin Seraphin, who was playing well at the time, and now he's back healthy. Now he's trying to incorporate him back in the lineup. That's somebody that you can utilize. And the Wizards, to me, if they can just utilize some of the people they had before, obviously the Drew Gooden signing and, you know, having Al Harrington back, utilize some of those guys who were playing really good, playing well for him, I believe they would play much better basketball. They wouldn't lose to teams like the Charlotte Bobcats.
Well, you kind of just spoke on it indirectly, relatively their rotation. Mm-hmm. I think that's the reason why they ended up collapsing last night. You went too long with the second unit. Once they started to shrink the lead and got it down to seven, I think you should have called a timeout. Even though John Wall wasn't playing that effective, mm-hmm. I would have probably went with a three-guard lineup with Dre Miller handling the ball with Bradley Beal. John Wall really opened it up, got up and down the floor against Charlotte Bobcats, even though they are number one in transition defensive points.
Yeah.
But at least make the attempt to push the ball up the floor and get things going, because they saw that anyone who saw the game saw that they were struggling in the half court, making open shots and getting shots off the pick, off of screens. But the Wizards, they'll have another opportunity to potentially clinch a playoff spot if the Knicks lose and they win Wednesday against, I think, Orlando, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it's Boston. Boston.
But we'll see how this plays out. Hopefully the Wizards don't collapse. If they do collapse, then...
The East is so bad, they'll be okay.
The East is terrible.
Let's go to a real dominant team. Let's go to the San Antonio Spurs. The Spurs right now are an 18-game winning streak, and they have the best record in the NBA. How have they been able to do this? Like, after I've seen them, I saw them play at the beginning of the season. I couldn't see this happening. I thought they looked old. And now all of a sudden they're looking like an actual decent team.
Simple.
Oh my God, what are you doing, son?
No, I'm just looking. Simple. Popovich, he knows how to click the right buttons. He knows when to get his stars rest. He coaches specifically for this part of the season, mm-hmm. to get his team ready for this part of the season. He's gone with his bench, gotten Tim Duncan, Ginobili, Parker, more rest. And anyone who's watched the Spurs play, no, they play a great style of offense. You know, a lot of pick and roll, mm-hmm. a lot of screens, making the extra pass, finding the open man. And also on defense, their half-court defenses, they apply from the standpoint of all on the ball defense. They apply a lot of pressure, get into the passing lane, cut off the passing lanes with denial. That's essentially how they've done it. Do I think this will transition over into the NBA playoffs? For one round, definitely. Second round, it'll be tougher to say. You know, if they get a draw against a team like
Memphis Grizzlies.
Well, not even the Memphis Grizzlies.
Well, Memphis Grizzlies will probably play them in the
first round. If they get a team that likes to get up and down, like maybe even the Phoenix Suns, they could be Golden State could be a tougher matchup for them. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I would like to see Tim Duncan get back and get another opportunity at it, but I just don't see it this year.
So how important is how important is it for them to even have home court advantage? You know, it's knowing that OKC is 3.5 games right behind them.
Pivotal for them to if they want to make it back to the NBA Finals. You know, you got to have that at that. You know, with
it'd be great to have Miami Heat San Antonio Spurs final again.
It would be. Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen.
That'd be great.
I think we're going to see this matchup
for entertainment purposes. I mean, Jasper's entertainment purposes.
I think we'll see the matchup that we saw a couple years ago with them versus OKC.
That'd be a good one too. That works. That works for me. That's actually even better, to be honest with you. Yeah, but I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I'm with you. I think getting the number one overall seed is essential in the Western Conference. I'm sorry, it's essential for the San Antonio Spurs. I don't think you want to go into OKC knowing what that kind of energy they have. They're going to have Russell Westbrook. They're going to have weapons. They have Lamb. They're going to have Caron Butler. They're going to have weapons.
Perry Jones.
They're going to have weapons enough to kind of run up and down against the San Antonio Spurs. Young legs, explosive bodies now. So is this going to be to a point where can Tim Duncan and Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili and, you know, can Kawhi Leonard even, like, really bother Kevin Durant? Now Kevin Durant's going to have his running partner. They're going to have so much to kind of try to concentrate on. So I definitely think that, you know, they need home court advantage. They don't want to go into OKC four times. They have to.
They don't even want to go to Los Angeles versus the Clippers four times, to me, in my opinion.
I still think that they would hinder that team. I don't know why. I believe in Doc Rivers, don't get me wrong, but I still think they can do some things with San Antonio, the Clippers. Though Blake Griffin is improved. I would not take that away from him. Has improved.
I could possibly see I can't see it. But I think he could put up similar numbers to I don't know if you remember when Amari Stoudemire went against Tim Duncan in the playoffs and he had a huge series. I could see Blake Griffin possibly doing that against Tim Duncan. If Blake tries to get to the lane and those shooters can stretch the floor.
Well, then Amari can knock down a perimeter jump shot. I mean, Blake cannot. He's improved his jump shot, don't get me wrong, but that Amari's J was at that time, he improved his J enough.
Yeah, off the pick and roll, 18-foot jumper.
That's something I think you can give. I would still give Blake that shot. Even though, Blake has shown to knock it down. Don't get me wrong, but that's a shot that I would give him more than that. But that's me, though. But I do think that it'd be an interesting matchup. It really would be. So you don't think this team can return to the finals?
Home court. No, I think this OKC year. Okay. I think OKC wins it all this year.
Okay, let's go. Let's go to the Eastern Conference. Let's go to the interesting battle right now that's going on. The Miami Heat Pacers battle. Who's going to get the number one seed in the Eastern Conference? The Heat now have the number one seed since the Pacers got humiliated by the San Antonio Spurs and they haven't playing great basketball. How important is it for the Pacers to regain that number one spot in the Eastern Conference?
I'll say this. Two of their last three games, not only against San Antonio, but also in Washington yeah. against the Wizards were up throughout the duration of that whole game. They won 91-78.
Yeah.
So they held in the under 80 points at home. As I stated previously on this show, there were two cancers that would kill this team.
Here you go.
One being the name of Andrew Bynum.
And Evan Turner.
And two, Evan Turner isn't a cancer per se, but his play doesn't mesh well with what Indiana wants to do offensively. Evan Turner is a guy who needs the ball in his hands to get off offensively. Now, although they don't have a great point guard on their team, a guy who could distribute the ball, but, you know, all you had to do is just look at some of their previous games with Evan Turner in the game. The flow of the offense drastically slows down with Evan Turner. That's all I'm going to say. I think.
May I have my rebuttal?
Yeah, have your rebuttal.
I'm waiting till you're done, though.
No.
I'm waiting till you're
done. As I stated before, I think that even though Larry Bird and Donnie Walsh and those guys tried to swing for the fences and go all in to get this team over the hump, I don't think they necessarily made the right moves to do such. They should have traded that Danny Granger contract for a true point guard. Go.
All right. Now, Evan Turner, I think this team is just struggling because it's the law of averages. This team is just struggling. They're going to struggle regardless. It was going to happen. I don't think Evan Turner is an essential part. I don't think he's an essential part. I think you have individuals on that team that need to step up or play smart basketball. Like Lance Stevenson is an individual who needs to play mature basketball. Even though they had the big matchup against the Miami Heat.
Sorry to cut you off. He's another reason why they moved to the NBA Finals. His emotion, he's too emotionally wound up to really contribute to us.
Yeah.
All you have to do is just look at him getting ejected. At the Heat game.
That was ridiculous. That was stupid.
Yeah, and also, you know, if he's matched up against LeBron James and LeBron James starts to go off against him, then he'll take it personal and he'll try to make it a one-on-one thing.
Exactly. So, to me, you know, and that's the reason why I had no problem with them getting Evan Turner because, honestly, Lance Stevenson is a wild card. You need somebody just in case, you know, Lance Stevenson goes, like, off the radar with it mentally. You need somebody who's more of a calming influence on your team. Evan Turner is a calming influence, and if a guy who needs the ball in his hand, Lance Stevens is a guy who over dribbles at times anyway. So I didn't have a problem with Evan Turner. I don't blame Evan Turner for their losing streak. I don't even blame Andrew Bynum, to be honest with you. He's not playing anymore because he got hurt.
He's just a cancer.
Yeah, I know. He is cancer.
He's just a cancer.
He sure is. He's just bad luck. He's like, I won't say that.
Don't say it. He's not bad luck.
But. That's just Andrew Luck Andrew Bynum in a nutshell. He's just not really, he's not good. He wasn't good for this team. And you add on to I think it's more coaching than anything though right now. And I like Vogel, but it's just more coaching. And I think this team puts so much pressure on themselves to be the number one seed. Like, we have to get the number one seed. We have to get home court when we play in Miami. And to a point where now, I think obviously, you know, when you get a losing streak, and you see Miami catching up. Now you put too much pressure on yourself, and it's like, oh, man, we got to be perfect every night. They weren't like that in the beginning. They had that hunger, but now Miami's caught up to them. Now it's like, oh, snap, we have to kind of play perfect basketball. And anytime you try to play perfect basketball, this is what happens. A losing streak occurs.
I don't think they regain the number one spot in the East from here on out. Mm. Two, I think this kills their psyche.
I think so too. I think this totally crushes their psyche. If they don't get the number one spot, they're not going to NBA Finals. And I think they're going to go into Miami, think they're going to lose.
Absolutely. I think this really kills their psyche. Mm-hmm. But on the other half of that equation is the Miami Heat. Why do you think this is equally important for them to grab their number one spot?
Because I don't think they're playing the best basketball they can. I think if they have, in my opinion, if they have the number one spot, they'll feel a little bit better about themselves. I know people, you know, get into the, all right, well, maybe they're not turning it on. I'm watching this team play, and you're waiting for them to just start dominating teams to the stretch run. The Pacers ain't playing great basketball. they're not playing great basketball. I mean, Pacers ain't playing great basketball. So it's time to kind of try to distance yourself from the Pacers, and they haven't done it. So how I look at the Miami Heat, it's like, all right, well, I think you need it because I don't even think you're playing the greatest basketball in the world. And if you do, like, if there's a team like Chicago who plays you well historically, they're going to make you fight. Though you may still win the series, they're going to make you fight. So I just think that this is a situation where you just want to have home court advantage, especially if you play the Pacers. Because I feel like if you have home court advantage, it's a guarantee in the Eastern Conference, it's a guaranteed finals appearance. It's a guaranteed chance to beat a three-peat, and you want that opportunity. If you are on the road, there is a slight chance you can lose to the Pacers. I won't deny. There's a slight chance, you know. But you want that guarantee, though. Because the Pacers, like we just said, if you get home court advantage, the Pacers' psyche is already jacked up.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Do they have enough to pull out the three-peat?
I think they have enough if Eric Spoelstra coaches right. I think throughout, you know, obviously he's got two rings, and, you know, people are going to forget about, you know, the criticism he received after the Dallas Mavericks, you know, champion, when Dallas Mavericks won the championship. But at the same time, you still got one of the most talented teams in basketball. And if you look at his rotations, we talk about Randy Whitman and his rotations. Eric Spoelstra's rotations are horrible. If I'm going to play a team on a defensive, you know, I mean, play a rotation due to defense because I feel like people can defend their position, then I'm going to play Hazlitt if I have to, and then I'm going to play certain other individuals. If I'm going to play an offense, if I want more of an offensive punch, I'm not playing Rashard Lewis over Michael Beasley. That's stupid. You know what I mean? If Rashard Lewis can defend his position, then yeah, but he can't even defend his position. That's just dumb. I'm not going to play. If I'm looking to stretch the court, if Ray, like, for instance, Ray Allen was out, I believe, in that Pacers game, mm-hmm. He was out. Beasley's not touching the floor. You're playing Rashard Lewis. That's not, or at least play James Jones, a guy who can, like, stretch the floor. You know what I mean? Like, somebody who can play that position or close to, you know, to knock down threes. I don't get his rotation. I just don't.
Well, as we know, during the playoffs, coaches typically shorten their
bench.
Yeah,
exactly. He's going to need to.
Usually go with a eight-guy rotation. So it'll be interesting. You know, as you stated, some of the names on that Miami bench, they obviously have the talent on that bench.
They have the talent on the bench.
But it'll be interesting to see if Coach Spoelstra decides to use those guys effectively during the playoffs.
If he wants a three-peat, if you can utilize that bench better, seriously. I mean, you got people on that bench who can put some work in for you, and you won't have to look bad. Now, they may not be good defensively. You take them out when they don't pan out. But there's some guys, especially playing with the great LeBron James, these guys don't have to work that hard. You know what I mean?
All right. I want two names. I want one name from Miami, one name from Indiana. Give me one guy from each team that needs to step up for them to get that number one spot.
Make it easy for you. Won't be a player, be coaches. It's easy. I just mentioned one, Eric Spoelstra for Miami and Vogel for Indiana. They got to step up on their coaching game. I mean, you're playing the horrible Eastern Conference. That's one.
Well,
you can't be losing games. Like, for instance, the Pacers shouldn't be losing to the Washington Wizards. They shouldn't be losing to Washington Wizards. I saw a game, I believe, that then Miami losing to, like, New Orleans. You shouldn't be losing New Orleans. It's like, it shouldn't happen. These are things that shouldn't happen. So your coaching has to step up. It's either you got to motivate your guys, or you need to start changing rotations and letting folks know that, okay, this is not acceptable.
Well, because I don't think Indiana will regain the number one spot, I'll give you one name from Miami that's gonna definitely has to step up. Greg Oden.
Oh yeah, because Roy Hibbert put in work on him.
Yeah, if Greg Oden can start to form into some shape, some resemblance of what he used to be when he was the number one overall draft pick, people would potentially talk about him as a game changer like Bill Russell.
Patrick Ewing-ish. Yeah. He did, sure did.
I think that he'll be the bump that takes this team all the way over to the tops of three-peat.
I have faith in Greg Oden. I'm just rooting for him because I think he's a good guy. That's a guy that you want to root for, which is different from, say, a guy I don't like in Andrew Bynum.
Oh, wow.
It's different. Like, you got to root for a guy like Greg Oden. You feel bad for him. Like, somebody like Andrew Bynum doesn't care about life.
That's a strong statement.
He don't care about life. I'm being real. Like, do you think Andrew Bynum cares about life?
I don't know if he cares about life at all, or because I don't talk to the guy. I don't know him personally.
I talk to him, like, mentally. When I look at him on the court, I look at him saying, I'm like talking to him right now. Like, Andrew, you don't give a fudge about life.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, Andrew, get the fudge off the court.
Okay. Well,
it's about time for that. Get hard to paint.
Yeah.
You want to hear that thing bump? I'm about to hear that thing bump. Watch.
Okay.
About to hear that thing bump. What the fuck you thinking? All right.
So give me one.
I really haven't thought about this. And I came and I decided to put the segment on. You know what? I'm gonna go to Washington Wizards. I'm gonna go with Drew Gooden, man.
Drew Gooden's been playing good.
I think Drew Gooden's gonna go hard in the paint against the Boston Celtics, help this team clinch the playoff spot that they deservingly need.
I'm gonna go. Wow, I kind of drew a blank right there. This is an obvious pick. He's developing into. He'll clearly in the next 5 years be the best one. Will be at least, if not the best, one of the top three players in the league. Anthony Davis. He's been on a tear as of recently, averaging about 20, 11, and then I think like 4 assists and 2 blocks.
Wait, so you going obvious?
Yeah, I'm going obvious with Anthony Davis.
Is this what we doing in the streets? We getting obvious now?
Yeah, I'm going obvious.
All right, well, I'm going to let you go with the obvious, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that, man.
I'm not going to get on you going obvious.
Yeah, okay.
Because who does that?
Yeah, I'm Captain Obvious.
I could have been LeBron. I said LeBron James.
You could have.
I could have saved my day.
But I'm Captain Obvious, though.
I'm going to say Carmelo Anthony going hard to paint because that team needs to make the playoffs in the worst way.
Yeah.
They got a chance.
They got a slim chance.
Oh, slim.
That's slim.
Slim. Slim like him being in New York next season. Yeah. anyway. Go ahead. Anyways, the show's about to wrap up. But before we wrap up, let me give y'all a couple of little info again. Make sure you check out the Data's Over event called The Love Experience. It's a brunch from 1 to 4. It's going to be fun, food, mature discussion. And also, you have an opportunity to maybe pick up a date. So, check it out.
Out the after party. It's called The Love Below. And if you don't know what that means, it's going down, baby.
Oh, my man. There's an after party, too, real talk. There's an after party, too. And I mean, make sure you purchase your tickets at www.stillsingle.eventbrite.com. It's going to be a good event. I'm going to be there, so you know it's going to be fun. And also, it's on my birthday weekend, so you know I'm going to be... I hate this term, but I guess I'll use it for you youngsters. I guess I'll be turned up that whole weekend.
Turned up and turned out.
I don't like that, turned out. That don't sound right. That sounds some jail stuff.
Hey, you know what? I was up, what was it, Sunday night?
Uh-huh.
And I was bored.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched on A&E. They had the, you remember the Scared Straight?
They had Scared Straight?
Yeah, man.
Booty Warrior?
Nah, they had a Booty Warrior. They had the dude, he was talking to a young black dude.
Yeah.
He was like, you pretty. You know what they do to pretty? Pretty mother like you? I pimp them. I sell them for Zuzus and Whammies. I was dying laughing, man, at like 2 o'clock in the morning, man.
Oh, my God. Yeah, them things, that documentary is something else, man, I tell you.
It was, man.
It's something else. That documentary is something else. But also, make sure you listen to the show by visiting our official Urban Sports Team website, which is www.waleo.podbeam.com. Waleo is spelled W-A-L-E-O. Podbeam is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. .com. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search The Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com.
All right. Once again, people, thank you for tuning in. If you're listening to us live, if you're not, please be sure to check us out on the podcast. And we'll talk to you all next week.
Yeah. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening. I think the show went down again on online. It's okay, I don't care. Anyway, it's the Urban Sports Scene
for ages.
You dig?
Deuces.